This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, the 27th of February, 2007. From KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Aura Bogado. The U.S. announces it will likely share a table with Syria and Iran next month to address Iraqi security. The Israeli army withdraws most of its troops from Nablus after one of its biggest operations in months. And we'll hear about the plight of more than 20,000 California farm workers let go after this winter's cold spell.
I have seen a lot of the groves that are completely dead. So it's going to take some time in order to replace all of the trees, the citrus trees and everything else.
We don't have the same money we have before. It's hard to live because you don't have any extra money for nothing.
All that and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with today's headlines. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing at the main entrance to the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. The attack comes as Vice President Dick Cheney was visiting the premises. The blast reportedly killed 23 people, but left the vice president unharmed. In Sri Lanka, the U.S. and Italian ambassadors and four other foreign envoys were injured today when Tamil Tiger rebels fired on Sri Lankan military helicopters carrying the delegation. The rebels say they did not know the helicopters were carrying diplomats and faulted the Sri Lankan government for jeopardizing the safety of the foreign delegation by flying it into a conflict zone. None of the diplomats received serious injuries. A prison psychologist testified yesterday that alleged Al-Qaeda member Jose Padilla is mentally fit for trial. That testimony contradicts experts from the defense who say he is mentally incompetent to stand trial on charges of participating in a North American terror support cell. Mitch Perry reports from Tampa.
Padilla was arrested at Chicago's International Airport in May of 2002. Initially, he was charged with attempting to detonate a so-called dirty bomb in a major U.S. city. He was labeled an enemy combatant and imprisoned by the military without criminal charges for 3.5 years. But those charges have been dropped. He's now accused of conspiring to support Islamic extremism abroad. But his attorneys claim he suffers from intense stress and anxiety stemming from being tortured in a Navy brig in South Carolina and is not mentally competent to stand trial. Two psychologists testified last week in a Miami federal courtroom that Padilla suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, but the military strongly denies that, saying there is no evidence for such a claim. If Padilla was found to be mentally competent, he and two other men will stand trial in April. If found guilty, they could face life imprisonment. Mitch Perry, Free Speech Radio News, Tampa.
Civil rights groups have teamed up with federal investigators to try to solve the cold case murders of the civil rights era. FSRN's Karen Miller has more from Washington, D.C.
Today, the Justice Department and the FBI join leaders from the NAACP, the National Urban League, and the Southern Poverty Law Center to announce a new partnership to investigate racially motivated murders of activists during the civil rights era. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez.
Much time has passed on these crimes. The wounds they left are deep, and many of them still have not healed. But we are committed to re-examining these cases and doing all we can to bring justice to the criminals who may have avoided punishment for so long, and to those individuals who committed these crimes and who have lived with their guilty consciences for these many years. Our message should be clear. You have not gotten away with anything. We are still on your trail.
Many of these murders, committed largely in the 1950s and 60s, were either not investigated, covered up, or misidentified as accidents or disappearances. The age of the cases also presents a challenge to investigators, as many witnesses and suspects have died, and important new evidence can be hard to find. The initiative to reopen these cases started last year with the goal of identifying hate crimes that happened prior to 1969 and resulted in death. Since that time, over 100 referrals for cases have been made to the FBI. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller.
The House of Representatives will vote this week on legislation that would enable working people to have more direct control over collective bargaining in the workplace. Najee Mujahid has the story.
H.R. 800, the Employee Free Choice Act, was introduced into Congress on February 5th by California Representative George Miller and is now backed by a 234-member bipartisan coalition. Its stated objective is to, quote, amend the National Labor Relations Act to establish an efficient system that enables employees to form, join, or assist labor organizations, to provide for mandatory injunctions for unfair labor practices during organizing efforts, and for other purposes. The AFL-CIO is excited about it, as union membership has been declining steadily over the past three decades. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney.
Working people need this legislation. The single best opportunity for working women and men to get ahead economically is by coming together with their co-workers to bargain with their employer for a better life through a union.
Although the bill has bipartisan support, opponents say that current regulations of union activity are sufficient. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Najee Mujahid.
Those are today's headlines. I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
The Bush administration has reversed its long-standing diplomatic policy of not negotiating with its enemies. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced the U.S. will open up dialogue with Iran and Syria in a meeting in Baghdad next month to address Iraqi security.
I would note that the Iraqi government has invited all of its neighbors, including Syria and Iran, to attend both of these regional meetings. We hope that all governments will seize this opportunity to improve their relations with Iraq and to work for peace and stability in the region.
Iraq has invited neighboring countries, the Arab League, and the five permanent UN Security Council members, including the U.S., to attend the forum in March. The Bush administration has received wide criticism for its lack of dialogue with countries like Iran, and the announcement about the dialogue comes as some think the Bush administration is planning for attack against Iran. The administration charges Iran with providing deadly weapons to fighters in Iraq and says it's working towards producing a nuclear bomb. Both claims are unproven. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made the announcement before the Senate Appropriations Committee, which is looking closely at Iraq and Afghanistan war funding. And although Iraq is still a top priority for Congress, the Senate has decided to hold off any Iraq debate for another 2 weeks. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
In Congress, lawmakers have been working to strategize how to address Iraq for more than a month now. The Senate has been in a stalemate, unable to proceed. And at least a dozen senators have come up with their own ideas on how to proceed on Iraq. The Senate has switched their strategy several times, starting with a variety of non-binding resolutions opposing the president's troop increase. Now, they're going to hold off on Iraq for another 2 weeks. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
We're going to do our utmost to finish the 9/11 before we move to Iraq again.
The Senate will move to legislation known as the 9/11 bill. Its objective is to implement additional recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, including port and air security. 9/11 families are the ones who've asked the Senate to keep Iraq a separate issue. Carrie Lamack is co-founder and president of Families of September 11th.
As we all know, 9/11 and Iraq are not related. And for the past 5.5 years, 9/11 has been used to justify a whole slew of things, some that had to do with 9/11 and some that didn't. And we know that Iraq and 9/11 are not related. And if the Senate chooses to use a 9/11 bill to move an Iraq amendment, it's almost a slap in the face to the 9/11 victims because we know that they're not related.
The 9/11 bill is expected to take 2 weeks. This gives a splintered Democratic Party time to firm up how they will proceed on Iraq. The idea gaining the most support is a bill to repeal the president's war authorization offered by Senators Joe Biden of Delaware and Carl Levin of Michigan. That idea would redeploy troops to the Iraqi border and redefine their mission from a combat role to a training role. But the exact words have not been decided, and it could cause some concern among Democrats. Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin.
But it depends on how it's phrased. If it is phrased in terms of reauthorizing in another form, I have a problem with that. If it's simply deauthorizing with certain exceptions, I think that's a step in the right direction.
As a proponent of ending the war, he was once a misfit. But now Senator Feingold has become an advisor for the Democratic Party on Iraq. He says the Democrats are now moving in the right direction.
Yes, I wish we'd done it much earlier, though, because this amount of time that it's taken to make the progress has been very costly in American lives and very costly in American resources and national security.
Senate Democrats also say the $100 billion supplemental could be a place they will try to end the war. That's a plan the House has tentatively supported. Representative Murtha of Pennsylvania's proposal is to place restrictions on the supplemental. But opposition among some moderate House Democrats are being voiced. House Democrats are meeting Tuesday night to discuss how they'll address Iraq in the coming weeks, which could also be a repeal of the president's war authorization. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer says many challenges do exist.
We can pass legislation through the Senate, get it to the president will sign it. Obviously, all of that is problematic, particularly the president signing something with which he disagrees. We clearly could not override a veto. But that does not mean we don't have a responsibility. Move ahead.
Republican leadership said they'll continue to push for legislation that assures troop funding. Meanwhile, Congress is praising the Iraqis for reaching a preliminary oil revenue sharing law. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
That's a very important part of holding the country together.
Critics say the law gives too much power to Western oil companies. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
A federal jury in Miami has found a former member of Haitian Military High Command liable for torture, extrajudicial killing, and arbitrary detention. Colonel Carl Dorelian has been ordered to pay $4.3 million in damages to plaintiffs Luz Justi Cajuste, a labor leader who was tortured by the Haitian military, and to the family of Michel Pierre, killed during the infamous Roubateau massacre in 1994, Amber Cortez reports.
Colonel Carl Dorelian took part in ousting democratically elected President Juan Bertrand Aristide during the violent military coup in 1991 and served in the military as chief of personnel from 1991 to 1994. On April 23, 1993, Lexuste Cajuste, a labor leader for Haiti's largest union, was going to a radio station in Port-au-Prince to announce a general strike when he was detained by police and brought into the station. There, the police told Lexuste Cajuste and his three colleagues to lie down on the floor and face the wall. Then, Cajuste says, he was given a choice.
One of them took a briefcase, and he took two guns, and he told me to choose one to use on me.
Hours of brutal beatings and torture ensued, until Cajuste lost consciousness for several days.
And when I wake up and I see I was lying in my back, they pull my pants and I lie in the floor, and the place they put me were very dirty and smell like someplace there's some dead body, like it smelled like that.
Under international pressure, Cajuste was eventually released and gained political asylum in the United States. Now he and another plaintiff have been awarded $4.3 million in a civil lawsuit against Carl Dorelian, a former member of Haiti's armed forces during the military regime. Moira Raffini is the staff attorney for the Center for Justice and Accountability in San Francisco and represented the plaintiffs in John v. Dorelian.
Well, under the law, we alleged that he was responsible as a commander. So we were not arguing that Mr. Dorelian himself was present in Rabateau on the day of the massacre, or that he had actually pulled the trigger himself. We're holding him responsibility as a commander. And that is to say that he knew or should have known that his subordinates were committing these atrocities, and he did nothing to prevent or to punish them.
The Center for Justice and Accountability has been pursuing Dorelian since he fled Haiti for the U.S. after Aristide was restored to power in 1994. Dorelian lived relatively unnoticed in Florida until something completely random happened.
Carl Dorelian won $3.2 million in the Florida State Lottery.
However, winning the lottery proved to be Carl Dorelian's downfall.
Winning the lottery brought the attention of the Haitian community and also the U.S. immigration authorities. He was later deported, but he was allowed to collect on his lottery winnings on a yearly basis. Until after we filed the suit, we were able to prevent him from collecting further on that money, and what remains from his jackpot remains in an escrow account in Florida.
Feeney admits that collection in these types of cases can be extremely difficult, especially if the defendant is living outside of the U.S., but hopes that this money will be used to repatriate the victims. Meanwhile, Lexuste Cajuste feels that justice was served.
I thought it was justice. But there is a lot of people in Haiti victimized under the armed forces in Haiti. I wish one day the all Haitian people will get justice.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Amber Cortez.
The Israeli army withdrew most of its troops from Nablus in the northern West Bank today after one of its largest military operations in months, as Israeli soldiers sealed off parts of the old city center and conducted door-to-door searches since Sunday looking for alleged Palestinian fugitives. Israeli troops killed at least one resident as he walked down the street with his son and injured about 20 more. Manar Jabrin reports.
Soldiers killed a 41-year-old man while he was inside his home and injured his son, who was abducted and released shortly thereafter. Israeli military sources said that this operation aiming at looking for Palestinian resistance men on the Israeli list of wanted. Dr. Ghassan Hamdan is head of the Palestinian Medical Relief Committees.
This resident suffered heart problems. Besides, the medical teams were obstructed by the occupation forces for some time before they could reach him for evacuation, which caused him to die. Troops also shot and wounded his son when his son attempted to save him. Then they detained the wounded son and the body of his father for some hours. He was released after being interrogated by the army.
One eyewitness who declined to give her full name reported that Israeli soldiers used some of the residents as human shields, which is against international law. Anna describes what she saw.
Last night, while we were walking around, we were waiting while some bread was being delivered, and the 8 soldiers walked by, and with them there was one Palestinian man. And the Palestinian man said very quietly to the men, the Palestinians with us, that he is being used as a human shield.
This operation began when at least 80 military jeeps, armored vehicles, and bulldozers invaded the city from its main entrances, blocked some of its main streets with mounds and cement blocks, and imposed curfew on the city to confine thousands of Palestinian families in their homes. The Israeli military also broke into several homes and turned them into military posts, as is their practice during operations. Anna was trying to deliver food to the residents of Nablus, said that many families had run out of food and milk.
For the moment, the soldiers seemed to have, they were sealing off the entire old city. Nobody could come in and out. And there are lots and lots of families who have run out already of food, and they're asking for food. We bring them bread. They want more than bread. They want milk for their children.
Soldiers also broke into several local radio and television stations, resulting in the cut of station transmissions and broadcasted warnings ordering residents of the city to stay indoors. Soldiers broke into one of these radio stations, confiscated its contents, and abducted the station manager. The army also surrounded 2 buildings inside the old city, fired rounds of live ammunition on them, and set one building ablaze. Additionally, Israeli forces surrounded a number of the hospitals in the city and barred their medical staff from reaching them until they checked them thoroughly. They then broke into one of the homes in the old city, which is owned by Nimer al-Dari, that is also used as a field hospital by Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. Nimer al-Dari, the owner of the house.
The occupation forces broke into the field hospital for the 20th time since the beginning of the military operation against Nablus. Troops completely destroyed all of its contents, including the furniture and the medical equipment.
Local sources in the city reported that the Israeli soldiers turned one of the local schools inside the city into an interrogation center where dozens of residents were taken after being abducted. For FSRN from IMEMC.org in Bethlehem, Palestine, I am Manar Jibrin.
An icy freeze that destroyed 3/4 of California's citrus crops is creating havoc for growers in the region. But, as FSRN's Leilani Albano reports, it's farm workers that are getting hit hardest by the cold spell.
The box of weekly food items Maria Carmen Castaño receives from a local union office isn't much. A bottle of cooking oil, spaghetti noodles, canned tuna, pineapple juice, and other canned goods, but she isn't complaining. Since losing her job as an orange packer last month, she has learned to stretch her food supplies to feed her family of three. Castaño is among the more than 20,000 farm and packing house workers let go after the crop freeze.
We were all impacted because all of the workers that were working in the packing house, even in the fields, were left without jobs. So we're very sad for the impact that it's having on our families.
According to reports, the January cold spell not only wiped out orange and lemon groves, but has affected other crops, including avocados, strawberries, and fresh-cut flowers as well. Lupe Martinez is organizing director with the Center for Race, Poverty, and the Environment. He says the effects on people's livelihoods will be long-lasting.
I have seen a lot of the groves that are completely dead. So it's going to take some time in order to replace all of the trees, the citrus trees and everything else. Therefore, workers are not going to be working.
As a first step, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger declared much of the state's Central Valley and coast a state disaster area, qualifying the regions for $85 million in aid. But while many growers are receiving government relief, almost none of it is trickling down to farm workers, many of whom do not qualify because they are undocumented immigrants. To fill in the gap, the governor approved a $1.75 million aid package to an organization called La Cooperativa, which will distribute aid to farm workers through the month of March. Lupe Martinez welcomes the funding, but says it is too little.
It's a good start, you know, 1.7 million, but it's definitely not going to be enough when you divide that among 20,000 people. So it's going to be a real problem.
For now, workers are taking on temporary employment to make ends meet. Again, laid-off packing worker Maria Carmen Castaño.
I also sell on the side. I sell Mary Kay. I also sell home interior to try to make do.
Victorino Solis, a foreman with A&B Harvesting, found work tending orange trees for a month, but says the wages do not cover the bills.
In January 19, they told us all of the citrus has been gone. We stopped for three weeks. Now we're lucky we come back to pruning the trees, but we don't have the same money we have before. It's hard to live because you don't have any extra money for nothing.
The governor is looking to the Bush administration to declare the citrus growing region a federal disaster area as a way to increase aid to undocumented immigrants and other groups. However, critics say they don't expect such aid to come anytime soon, arguing the federal government is delaying a decision on purpose in order to push immigrants to move elsewhere. Lupe Martinez of the Center for Race, Poverty, and the Environment.
Well, with everything that's going on with the immigration, all these things that are going on and trying to, you know, strengthen the borders and all this other stuff, it would seem like that is an intention at this point.
Democrats in Congress have put together their own freeze relief plan. Federal lawmakers, including California Senator Barbara Boxer, announced bills providing for an additional $1.2 billion in aid, with a portion going towards farm workers. For FSRN, this is Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
As the British government makes plans to replace Britain's aging nuclear submarines, Western diplomats met in London to discuss a new UN resolution addressing Iran's nuclear program. Speaking out against the UK's nuclear program, British activists and politicians rallied in London on Saturday. Manuel Rueda has more. Absolutely
nothing. Around 100,000 people enjoy a remake of War, a 1969 hit by Edward Starr. Greens, Muslims, and socialists are just some of the groups that have come to London's Trafalgar Square to speak out against Britain's involvement in Iraq.
Shame to Blair! Shame to Bush! We want freedom for the...
Many speakers pass by the podium. They talk about the war, about the occupation of Palestine, about nuclear weapons.
We want the Middle East to be nuclear free and make sure Israel doesn't have any nuclear weapons. More than that, we want to make sure we don't have Trident in this country at all.
The British government want to replace Trident, the UK's aging fleet of nuclear submarines. Kate Hudson chairs the campaign for nuclear disarmament. She says that government plans to invest in nuclear weapons send a bad signal to countries like Iran.
It's our view that if certain countries, you know, the nuclear weapons states, say that they need nuclear weapons for their security, you know, they're essential to keep a country safe, then other countries will come to the same conclusion.
In the coming weeks, Parliament will decide if it wants to give the green light to the government's nuclear plans. Most members of Parliament think that the UK should retain its nuclear arsenal. But at the same time, British diplomats are trying to get Iran to quit its nuclear program. To many protesters, that doesn't sound right.
I do not accept that there is a parallel between countries that are led by governments that are fundamentally controlled by their people because their people can remove them peacefully, periodically in democratic elections, and countries that are dictatorships.
Julian Lewis is an MP for the Conservatives and a defense expert. He thinks that there is room for the UK to reduce its nuclear stockpile, but that the future is still too uncertain for Britain to disarm.
Nobody can possibly guarantee that a serious threat of blackmail or conventional aggression by a country that might have, for example, a few nuclear weapons will not arise over the next 50 years.
Tony Blair may be happy to hear Dr. Lewis's views, because it's looking like his government will have to rely on the Conservative opposition to pass its nuclear policies.
Nuclear weapons are appalling. They kill tens of thousands of people with a single blast. This is war taken to an unacceptable level, if war was ever acceptable.
John Trickett is a Labour MP who spoke at Saturday's protest. He is rebelling against the government, and he is not alone. 2 months ago, a poll found that almost 40% of Labour MPs opposed plans to renew Britain's nuclear arsenal.
Maybe the answer is not to rearm now, not to disarm either, but to have the discussions in 2010 and try to get a round of international disarmament where British weapons, American weapons and other people's too are removed from the planet. That will be the best way forward.
Opinion polls here suggest that most Britons do not want to replace the country's nuclear submarines, but so far it looks like the government is reluctant to change its course, be it on nuclear weapons or on its support for the war. So anti-war campaigners are finding new ways to get the message out. As you listen to this program, someone in England may be sending a text message to buy this song. They are hoping to get War to top the UK's pop charts by March 19. That day will mark the 4th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. This is Manuel Rueda, reporting from London for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Our newscast is produced by Tina Gysi and Monica Lopez. Our Washington editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Our technical production team is at KPFA in Berkeley and includes Antonio Ortiz and Eric Klein. You can listen to this newscast in its entirety online at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. We welcome your comments, questions, and story ideas. Just email us at comments@fsrn.org. From KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Ara Bogado. LA, it be the base and the catalyst. Walk Crescent Heights worldwide back to strangle us. Land of the saint and the land of the wicked. Hollywood prevailed, the man of Kenya. World of duality, every reality. Devin Brown shot, minor technicality. Brad Pitt's cheating from Page Reality. Stanley Miller beating, DA don't wanna touch it. But I love my city, soft yet rugged. Rep LA, I know the angels are loving.